So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Who would believe that the 20th Royal Rumble, the most star-studded, is quite frankly the best of them all?
JBL, right now, who do you think? Who's got the most gas left in the tank?
This is how Shawn Michaels eliminated Diesel. Here we go.
Shawn Michaels eliminated the X like that. With the sweet chin music. And it's Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, is going to WrestleMania.
Illustrious career, The Undertaker has won the Royal Rumble.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock, and I'm joined as always by
Wei Ting.
That down to a science.
Yeah, we just recorded a bunch of promos for.
No, we didn't.
We were practicing for a bunch of promos that we will record this Sunday during the law.
Live. Yes.
Promoting this next week's show.
Yes. We could go backwards, I guess, because usually we announce what show we're going to be reviewing at the end of the show, but this week we left it open to everybody, so the results are right there on the page, and we will be reviewing the 92 Rumble next week.
The 92 Rumble.
I believe this was the Ric Flair year.
Was it?
I think so.
Yeah, it's not that important. I don't know why you guys chose such an unimportant Rumble.
Well, we will review it nonetheless. But today we're chatting about the 2007 Royal Rumble. Not too long ago, it was only 5 years ago, and if I'm not mistaken, we would have watched this together at CFRB.
I have no recollection of that whatsoever.
I'm pretty sure you were our call screener at that point.
I don't even have any recollection of this show. So when I was watching it, I just... it was like watching it for the first time.
Isn't it amazing that we can recall so much from the 94 Royal Rumble? But actually, you hadn't seen that one either. No, you had seen that one.
Uh-huh.
But yet, when we're going back 5 years...
You know what?
Nothing.
Certain moments in my life as a child, I remember very vividly. But I don't know. I guess the last 5 years just kind of all blended together. Do you remember this show?
Bits and pieces. I remember the ending very well.
Okay.
But what's going on?
What, in my life?
Yes.
You want to? It's a bit weird just talking to you about my life. I'm so accustomed now to having three people inside this room.
Yes.
Two other people to talk to.
Yeah, well, we had quite the show last week.
Yeah, but, I will tell you, not much.
Your whole week, that's how you sum it up, with not much?
I was on vacation the week prior, and then coming back, it's just like, what do I do with all this time? You know what I did? I was watching the news. You hear about this cruise ship that sunk?
Yes, I did hear about it.
Jesus Christ.
I didn't even put the two together with you and this story. Wow.
I was on a cruise just the week before, and I kept thinking, man, what if I left for my cruise this week? I'd be freaked out. I wouldn't have fun the entire time.
Was it, it was like 20 people are missing, and one woman, I think, had like a heart attack.
Oh, yeah?
And died as a result of that as it was going down.
I don't know the actual numbers, and I think they're still searching for survivors right now. But this captain is being seriously, questioned. And,
good.
And maybe even put on criminal charges for leaving the ship. Abandoning ship is the law, because the captain's supposed to stay there till the end.
I don't want to get too morbid here, but if you were on a cruise ship and it was going down.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you do?
Fuck, I'd die.
There's no option. Like, really. You're in the middle of the sea.
Yeah.
The captain has left.
Oh, you'd fight.
Like, there's nothing to do.
Well,
you remain there. It's just a question of time. You can either get this over with quickly, or you can just wait it out. But odds are nothing good is going to happen.
What are you suggesting, that you would kill yourself in that situation?
I'm sure that there are some people who would... Listen, the outcome is kind of predetermined.
You don't know that. You don't know if there's a chopper flying overhead coming to rescue you.
Well, that's... You're a hell of an optimist.
Come on. You got to be optimistic in a situation like that. Look at the Kate Winslet. She was rescued.
Kate Winslet? When was she
Titanic.
Rescued? Oh, that's not a real, actually.
Well, okay. The character,
based on a true
the
story.
Character that I don't know if she was real or not, but come on, she stayed till the end. They found her.
Rose. Yes. And Jack.
Jack?
Do you remember that scene where he's like, don't let go. She's like, I'll never let go. And instantly let go of him, and he just sunk.
She means maybe in her heart, because her heart will go on.
Listen, did you ever see Titanic?
I did. And
in the theater or a movie?
In the theater.
Yeah, I did too.
And I have a story about that, because I watched it with my dad. My dad, huge Celine Dion.
Okay, your dad's coming in one of these days, okay?
My dad is a huge Celine Dion fan. Doesn't understand a word of the the songs, but just I don't know what it is, man. Celine Dion just has that effect on I guess, the Asian immigrants in their 40s or 50s. And so he really wanted to see this movie. My dad only sees like maybe one movie a decade. This decade it was Avatar. Last decade it was Titanic.
This decade.
And so he
James
sat
Cameron,
there.
He's the thread here.
I guess so. Yeah, that's it. And so we were watching it. And okay, everything's fine. This is just, you know, it's a movie. And all of a sudden the drawing scene occurs.
Oh, what an awkward scene to watch with a parent. You would have been like 13 at this time.
Yeah.
Oh.
And for a lot of people, I guess that would have been a, you know, yeah, that's like, it's a PG-13 age. I'm supposed to be allowed to see boobs. But anyway, this scene, for those who, I don't know how many of you have not
Everyone's
seen
Titanic.
But Leonardo DiCaprio is, of course, sketching Kate Winslet in the nude. And, I was sitting right next to my dad, and awkward to say the least. So awkward, in fact, he took out a napkin and covered my eyes inside the theater. And I was just happy to let him do it.
Because, man,
I didn't want to be a part of this. I didn't want to see boobies with my dad there.
I don't know what I enjoy the most, the fact he did that or the fact he didn't even use his hands. He was at least clean enough to use a napkin.
Oh, he's a very hygienic person.
What an awkward. You know, I had similar experience, though, with my brother, where him and I were like 10 years old. I would have been a year older than him. He was maybe 9, and I rented Interview with the Vampire. And this was, I think, the first movie I had seen where there was a naked woman in it. And I remember me and my brother watching it, and it was just very awkward.
Just you and your brother?
Yeah.
None of the rest of your family was there?
No.
All right. I'd never seen that movie, but we'll talk about the scene.
I can't remember it that well. I know Tom Cruise is in it, and I don't even know who the... It was some naked vampire.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was just, didn't know what to say. I didn't have any wisecrack to make. Like, oh, those are boobs. Yep.
You're both shocked.
I don't understand why nudity is such an awkward
at that age.
Thing to watch with anybody.
Okay, but at that age, even today, for me, like to, come on, I'm not going to go to, you know, go to a strip club with my dad. That's like, that's super weird.
Maybe you should, and report back. He's got a napkin.
Dude, it'd be, I don't know, man. It just is. It's just how you're brought up, I guess.
Well, there was no nudity on this Royal Rumble.
It's been a long time.
Unlike the 2000 Royal Rumble, where there was nudity.
That's right. It's been a long
which
time.
Which I felt awkward about, even at my age now, going back and watching that.
Yes, well, it's been a long time since we've had live boobs on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it's about time they make a comeback, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
This was from the AT&T Center in San Antonio, Texas, home of Shawn Michaels. And there was no Triple H on this show because a few weeks before they had the New Year's Revolution event and Triple H had torn his quad again in a tag match.
I thought that muscles grow back stronger if you tear them. Or is that bone?
No, but I've always heard, like, if you break your bone, it's never as strong as it was before.
Hmm.
Naturally.
Okay. So I guess the muscles are the same.
Ligament tears and anything where muscles are tearing, that's, I don't know. Usually that's a warning sign of something being used.
Huh.
Something. There was an opening video promoting this as the most star-studded rumble of all time. Kennedy was doing, Mr. Kennedy, not Anderson at this point, saying it's his destiny to win the world title.
Hmm.
This company's really evolved in 5 years when it comes to presenting their top heel.
You get a guy with an accent to say it, and it's completely different.
Yep. And the theme song for this was Drones by Rise Against.
Okay.
Rise Against, a fan way, because these guys just came on with like 8,000 songs in like a six-month period.
No, I wasn't aware. I was out of touch with that scene. Is that it? They is that what they're known for? Just coming out with a bunch of songs in that period?
Yeah, they just appealed to, you know, your rocker crowd, I guess.
Cool. Aren't they like a punk band? Like a
Kind of punk. I think people who are actual punk fans would probably look at Rise Against. And be people like, no, they don't represent us.
People who like fucked up probably don't like Rise Against.
I doubt
vice
it.
Vice versa.
I don't know if Rise Against has the credibility of a fucked up.
I don't know.
So, and then we saw there was a closing angle to set up Umaga and John Cena, where Umaga splashed through a table onto John Cena as the fans looked on in fear. And that sets up the opening here. Three sets of announcers. We had Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler representing Raw, Michael Cole and JBL with SmackDown, and Joey Styles and Taz at the ECW commentary booth.
Mm-hmm.
So I was happy because we were going to get JBL for a prolonged period of time tonight.
Me too. What a treat.
And the opening matchup, the Hardys against Eminem with Melina. This was non-PG Melina, where during her entrance, she had a short skirt and did the splits so you could see her thong.
Wow. Wow.
And then she had to convert to tights.
Yes. Sir?
Is this awkward?
It kind of
is. I put a napkin over my eyes as
Why
I
are you putting
saw
a napkin
this.
Over my face? Anyway.
They replayed the spot where Joey Mercury fucked up his face at the Armageddon pay-per-view doing the teeter-totter spot that has since been retired from ladder matches. This was just a violent, violent visual that I instantly remembered when they showed this, where I think it was one of the Hardys who jumped off, flung the ladder right into Mercury's face, and his eye just moments later completely swollen shut. It's amazing this guy didn't lose an eye during this spot.
Yes, absolutely. And when was that pay-per-view?
It was just a month prior. It would have been Armageddon, so the December show.
It's amazing that these guys continue to wrestle even with an injury so serious. Just slap this on.
Here's It'll a face mask. He was wearing the Virgil face mask. So they showed this spot, and then they cut back to Mercury the heel, who's just shaking his head. I don't agree with that. That was wrong. And this, to me, was like this baby-faced him. This guy got a ladder flung into his face.
Oh, yeah, okay. But he looks really ugly in the mask, and therefore ugly people are bad.
That is the general rule of thumb in wrestling.
Yeah.
From there, we have there was an angle on SmackDown where they delivered the snapshot, which was their how would you describe this? They would put Matt Hardy on one shoulders and then DDT him onto the concrete floor. But Matt's neck was it's good, it's good. He had the Garrett Bischoff recovery here. Three days later, he was fine.
He was still attempting to sell it, but like, you know, it's not a full-blown neck collar type of situation.
Well, Jim Ross was concerned, stating that Matt has not eaten solid food for a week as a result of the fractured jaw he sustained.
Yet they cleared him to wrestle.
Solid food comes later. Working comes first. So he
you
was,
can drink, you can wrestle.
Yeah. I wonder, are grapes considered a solid food?
Probably drinking grape juice.
Or loves his grapes. Jeff was the Intercontinental Champion at the time. And the Hardys got the advantage, but then Nitro punches Matt Hardy in the jaw to get the heat, and they put Matt into their corner. Matt gets draped on the ropes and kicked by Mercury on the apron as the heels continue. Jeff eventually gets a hot tag, hits the Whisper in the Wind to Johnny Nitro, and then the Hardys come off the top, and Jeff hits... Nitro gets his knees up, so Jeff hits the knees as Matt hits a leg drop. This looked like a very difficult spot to time. But Jeff was the legal man, so Eminem continues to beat down on Jeff, work over his ribs.
I thought it was a neat spot because, you know, we've seen the Hardys do this move a lot. But they did it so that Nitro still received the leg drop from Hardy, but got the knees up on Matt, Jeff, who was a legal man.
So Jeff had to continue selling, yeah.
And Jeff couldn't go for the pin, so it was nice.
Jeff made a tag to Matt, but the referee missed the tag. We see the Bulldog clothesline combo to Eminem and gets a near fall. And then they tease the snapshot, but Jeff breaks it up. He hits the Poetry in Motion to Mercury, but then goes for one on Nitro and misses. Matt then hits a side effect to Nitro, and he goes for one to Mercury, but is tackled to the floor. Jeff makes the blind tag as those two go to the floor and hits the Swanton onto Johnny Nitro and gets the win. 15 minutes and 27 seconds. I thought this was a very good opener. These four worked very well together, and they were paired quite a lot on TV at this point. A good match.
I absolutely agree. A pretty good opener, a very clean match. And really, you know, just from watching, even at this point in 2007, just the star level of Jeff Hardy, undoubtedly the biggest star of the four here.
And today, all four are gone.
No. Jeff.
From WWE.
Oh, okay. But I thought you meant actively.
Three of the four are done.
Yeah.
Mercury's working, I think... The training guys in OVW, I think.
Oh, yeah?
I think he's training somewhere.
Okay. And Nitro could show up at any time.
Yes.
Or, sorry, Morrison.
Actually, John Hennigan now. Any of those names.
Hennigan, that's right. Well, he'll be a Johnny Impact.
Oh.
How about that?
Yes.
Johnny Raw. Terrible.
Melina can use her name.
Okay.
Melina Perez.
Sure, yeah.
I think it'd be best for Johnny Impact to go solo. Johnny Impact. That could work.
Oh, what a terrible gimmick.
He was, for a brief period, Johnny Thunder, and then got moved to Johnny Nitro. It's just these stupid jokes they had. Coachman and Teddy Long are in the back where the talent would be drawing numbers for the Royal Rumble, and Kelly is the official match tumbler.
She's the sole representative of ECW.
Great. Yeah. Edge comes in and mocks Kelly for her tough job, asks if her parents named her twice so she wouldn't forget. This was the first time I've ever heard an explanation for why she is called Kelly.
I don't know anybody who has two names for their first and last name. Does this even exist in real life?
Oh, I'm sure there's someone out there who had parents who thought it would be really funny.
Maybe like a Richard Dick or something.
Richard Dick.
Yeah. Or something like
horrendous.
I've never met a person with two names.
I never thought that name would stick, Kelly. I was like, they'll have to rename her at some point when the joke runs out. And it's been 5 years of her on television.
Well, I guess Ken Kennedy is another one.
Ken Kennedy, I guess.
Yeah.
So Kelly is there, gets insulted. Then Randy Orton walks in. They draw their numbers. Edge says, "I'll show you mine if you show me yours."
Oh, boy.
This was still at a time in 2007. And listen, this is my argument where I'm not against the PG era. Because from 2003 onwards, the Attitude Era was over with. But they still felt the need to come up with things that are classified as edgy. And this, to them... Ooh, we're going to tell a penis joke. I'm happy that in today's WWE, we don't get stupid penis jokes.
I don't necessarily think... Yeah, and we've talked about this before. The PG and non-PG argument is not really... this is not that.
It's good PG and there's good edgy programming.
It comes down to creativity. It comes down to good writing. And this, no matter what, you know, how many curse words you put in it or not, was just bad, awful, terrible writing. All these segments in this evening, just terrible.
King Booker then walks in to say, tell me you didn't just say that. So Edge, Orton, and Booker, all main eventers at this point, doing lame comedy.
Terrible.
I don't know if you got to, if they included promos on this for you, but up next we had the WrestleMania ad campaign. When we were young, where they hired children to play childlike versions of John Cena, Tori Wilson, and King Booker, including this little girl holding a dog to be Tori, and another kid in a King Booker King outfit. This is all to promote WrestleMania 23.
I thought these were great. I really liked these ads back then. They're all grown up.
They are, yep. They're all grown up, despite what the last segment might have suggested about their comedy.
Yes, it's a bit weird, though, seeing like a Tori Wilson, this like sex symbol, who dresses up in a bikini in her 8-year-old form. It's a bit creepy.
And the dog is not aged at all.
Well,
the Chihuahua.
Yeah.
Chloe.
The reverse dog years. Doesn't she still have this dog?
She does.
Because I've seen pictures
of her. I have too, where she had the dog. I'm assuming it was Chloe.
Alex Rodriguez, and yeah, she's holding this dog.
I've got to say, and, you know, I am just observing here, these photos of Alex Rodriguez and Tori at the beach. I mean, Tori looks in ridiculous condition.
Yeah.
I mean, she looks like she has no body fat on her.
She's got one of those, like, yoga bodies, like hardcore.
Yeah.
Yoga bodies that are, like, slim and, like, you can almost see the muscle, like.
Oh, yeah. Like crazy definition, and it's like. This wasn't even for a photo shoot. This was like some guy just taking photos of her on the beach, which is creepy in and of itself. But Alex Rodriguez, who is a professional athlete, looks like shit.
Oh, does he?
I mean, he looks like he's got this big gut on him.
Oh, come on. They're baseball players.
I'm just surprised.
Hardly an athlete. Come on.
You're going to get some baseball
fans. Just stand there.
I used to
play baseball. You just stand there.
Depends what your position is. He's a shortstop.
So you run from one end of the room to another. It's hardly.
Someone's going to crucify me because I don't think Rodriguez is a shortstop.
Anyone.
I don't want anyone to correct me, please. I don't care.
Any one of those positions.
Coming up next, Bobby Lashley and Test. This was horrible. The video for this featured Test giving a big boot to RVD and costing him a shot at Lashley's title. And for the go-home show for ECW on the Tuesday leading into the Rumble, they had Bobby Lashley pin Test clean.
They just did this match.
On the Tuesday before. Ooh, maybe I'll see this exact same finish at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Can't see anything worse.
That would actually at least make a bit of sense. What we did end up seeing. Absolutely.
It was reverse. We should have seen this match on the go-home show and the go-home show finish on this show.
Uh-huh.
Nope. So, Bobby Lashley and Test, ECW title. Taz says, if you don't want that ECW title, then get the hell out of here. And there was a huge confusion in the back that they would not have enough talent for the Rumble match later on because everyone left the locker room when they heard this. We see a lockup and a slap by Test. Lashley comes back with a spear. Lashley gets knocked off the apron and to the floor as Test gets the advantage. Crowd was just not interested in this at all as Test worked over Lashley and his left arm. Lashley made a comeback with shoulder blocks in the corner, went for a press slam, but the shoulder was too hurt to hold him up. And then Test hits a big boot for a near fall. Lashley blocks a F5 and then hits a belly-to-belly suplex and then a clothesline to the floor. Test is on the floor. The challenger is on the floor. And he walks out, and he is counted out at 7:09. And the crowd was just ecstatic for this finish they got, booing this vociferously. Lashley brings him back into the ring and hits a running power slam. Horrendous.
I have no idea what they were thinking. The guy just leaves. I mean, can you not afford a loss for Tess? Even though you just gave him a clean loss on your go-home show?
And would give him a clean loss on TV after this.
I just didn't understand.
This was Impact at its finest.
Yeah.
An Impact Wrestling pay-per-view.
Okay, but at least on Impact, you might have some curiosity to see the rematch on the TV. With this, crowd reaction was flat. Match was okay. I thought... I thought Taz and Styles did a good job describing the psychology with the, you know, Tess working on the shoulder, but I was perplexed by the booking.
There is a doctor taking John Cena's medicals, and Vince McMahon walks in and asks if he is going to forfeit the WWE title tonight because of his abdominal injury suffered from the table spot on Raw. And Vince doesn't believe that Cena's fine and says, I can't see you as champion after tonight or as the last man standing. Vince was the lamer character here.
Well, this writing team was the star, I would say, of all these segments. Man, they were in fine form, whoever was around. Sorry, Dave Lagana, if that was you.
He wouldn't have been on SmackDown at this point.
Oh, okay.
Or Raw. He was doing, I believe he would have been doing ECW at this point. A No Way Out ad aired. It was 30 seconds where I think the goal was to say No Way Out as many times as they could in 30 seconds. They got it out like 6 times in 30 seconds. There's no way out of No Way Out. Catch No Way Out live on pay-per-view because there's no way out.
Well, how could you resist with a name like that? How could you resist to
Well, they didn't. They showed no restraint.
There was no way out of their will.
Cole and JBL then preview the next match, and JBL says, once again, SmackDown is headlining a pay-per-view. Not only was this not headlining, this was not even the last title match we would see before the Rumble. Yeah. I love JBL. he's a carny's carny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We see a video preview for Batista and Kennedy where Kennedy beat the clock by edging out The Undertaker's time by 1 second after he interfered in a match with The Undertaker against The Miz,
mm-hmm.
when The Miz was the biggest joke in wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
So here we go, Batista and Mr. Kennedy for the world title. JBL says, if you're the top man on SmackDown, you're the top person in the world. The world.
You know what? If you say it with enough conviction, I'm going to almost believe it.
This was great. I'm never going to get on somebody for trying to overemphasize mm-hmm. the importance of their product.
Look, dude, JBL, I can't say enough good things about him in all these shows. I mean, he's a classic heel commentator who makes sense of a heel's actions and gives logic to their motives.
And it's a big transition, I find, going from heel promo to heel announcer, because it's completely different. In a promo, you're putting heat on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the announcer, it's a 180. You're supposed to put heat on the product and the heels mm-hmm. and not yourself. And JBL, I think he struggled for maybe 2 or 3 weeks before he found his groove, and he was just great.
Yeah, instead of focusing on your own role, you really have to focus on other people's roles and, you know, almost do the thinking for the other characters. Why would I do this? Why would they do this? Why would, you know, such and such cheat?
JBL, we start off with Kennedy attacking the knee, and this would continue where he would attack Batista on the floor, driving the knee into the steps. He even applied a reverse figure four submission. Batista got to the ropes, and it was all Kennedy attacking the leg. He got busted open hard way at one point from the nose, applied a half crab after losing the leg of Batista's for a Boston crab, and then eventually Batista powered out of that. He goes for a power slam, but Kennedy slides off and clips the knee. I thought this told a very good story, and it kind of limited what Batista had to do in the match other than, you know, just selling, which at times isn't his strongest suit, but I thought Kennedy was very good here. Batista came back with a series of suplexes and slams. He then powered up, went for the Batista bomb, but Kennedy again attacks the knee, and then elbows the referee by accident, Batista does, and Kennedy comes back with a neck breaker. He gets the visionary fall as JBL is counting out loud, and Kennedy should be winning. This kind of backfired in the sense that they were putting Kennedy over so much, the arena started chanting Kennedy,
mm-hmm.
and Batista then hit a clothesline and a Batista bomb, but Kennedy fights off to the end, but takes a power bomb and loses 10 minutes and 31 seconds, but very strong booking of Kennedy in this match, where even by losing, he came across a very strong as someone that the company was definitely getting behind.
Hard to believe that the same guy who was receiving these chants was the same guy that I've seen this year, not last year in TNA.
Like, go away, Heat.
God. Wow. Here, he was actually, you know,
this was the peak of his time. This was before, like, the real downfall for him. It was like after that Money in the Bank win, he got his injury misdiagnosed, where they mm-hmm. took the briefcase away from him, where he was going to win the title. Then he did all those interviews after the Benoit murder-suicide, and that came back with the signature pharmacy thing. This was really a high point for him because 2007, it seemed everything fell apart for the guy.
It's a bit too bad. And this match was good, too. The wrestling was good, especially for a Batista match. I was very impressed, actually. JBL, at the end of this match, is just freaking out, saying how Kennedy should be going to WrestleMania. He covered him for 10 count. He's really upset, and JBL's still the highlight of these matches for me.
He was just so great. Kevin Thorne and Ariel are in the back drawing numbers, and he says, it's time to feast. And then Hornswoggle comes in acting all crazy. This was when he was simply known as the Little Bastard.
Okay.
Because he didn't know his father.
Sure.
But then he would learn his father later in the year. And Coach then makes a short joke to Bastard, and then the Little Bastard bites Coach and then kicks him in the knee, and he goes to leave, but he walks into the Great Khali's shin and stares up, and this was simply for the visual of Khali staring down Hornswoggle, and he runs away, and Khali grabbed three of the balls, and they said you can only have one number, so he drops the two. Kelly picks up the two balls and says, these are the biggest balls I've ever held. And they cut to Ron Simmons, who says, damn.
I wish my dad was there to cover my eyes and my ears for this.
Oh, the ears, I would have said, above the eyes.
How embarrassing for me to watch this. It's not even a clever line.
Oh, balls. Like testicles.
They're the biggest balls I've ever held. Please.
Sexual innuendo.
What innuendo? There's nothing there. Why would anybody say this? Fuck.
The Marine's coming out on DVD. The unrated version of The Marine.
One we have not yet reviewed. Nor will we.
I watched that movie in the theater. They had a screening the morning the movie was released.
Wow.
They wouldn't allow screenings before that. The morning of. So I watched that fucking movie at 9 a.m. and John Cena fucking diving out of an exploding building.
And?
The best was a WWE representative after the movie at 10:30 simply said, I need a cigarette after that movie.
Oh, that's great.
They plug the theme song for WrestleMania. And they branched out here. Saliva. Who are in the front row? Ladies and gentlemen.
They must be fans. They must be huge
fans. Oh, they're huge fans because all their fucking royalty money comes from the WWE.
I would guess
we had just watched Batista with his Saliva theme to come and to exit his last match. And now we've got Saliva in the front row plugging their theme being used for WrestleMania.
Saliva. What are they doing? Are they still relevant?
They're probably just waiting for the next babyface to come along in WWE.
Okay.
They probably just, you know, hey guys, we're around. We can do, we have range. We have a lot of range.
We can do, maybe they'll do a cover of Brodus Clay's theme.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The Metalsaurus. I don't know. New metal source. Then they have a video for Cena and Umaga with Cena. The story at New Year's Revolution, if you watch this video, you might just simply have a, you know, Test Lashley moment here where Cena pinned Umaga at the last pay-per-view. But the whole story of that match was that here is Umaga. He is unbeaten and Cena could not get him to submit to the STFU, and he was forced to find a different way to pin Umaga, and he got it with a fluke roll-up. And it was actually, I was a big fan of this feud at the time. So that kind of led into this. It's a last-man-standing match where Cena can't resort to some fluke pin, because that's how it was presented at the last pay-per-view. And we go here. Cena has his ribs taped from the angle on Monday, and Umaga attacks the ribs right away, sends him to the floor, tosses Cena into the steps. Umaga then gets guillotined on the top rope, and then Cena tosses the steps from the ring to Umaga on the floor.
Insane. An insane spot. I mean, one, because Cena can actually lift this thing and toss it pretty much, you know,
He's the Marine way.
It's insane the strength of this guy. And two, because Umaga took it on the outside point blank, these giant steel steps, and he took it perfectly. Hands up, got out of the way to sustain any real damage. It looked great. Looked great.
Back into the ring, Umaga would recover and apply a bear hug, then hit a belly-to-belly suplex and brought more steps into the ring. And then we got a chant of, "We want Angle." Which he had just debuted for TNA a few months prior to this.
Oh, wow.
And this was right on the brink of when they were ruining him.
I can't believe it was that long ago.
Yeah. So, September 06.
It's been like almost
he joined there.
It's been 4 years he's been there.
More, five. Five and change.
September of 06. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yes, yes, yes.
So Cena comes off the top rope into a black hole slam. Then Cena comes back with a slam onto the steps in the ring. He hits the five knuckle shuffle. I hate that move. I just don't like it.
I don't mind it.
The five knuckle shuffle.
Why?
First of all, the name of that move has to change.
Why?
The five knuckle shuffle?
Yeah. Knuckle and shuffle, they rhyme. What's wrong with that?
Okay, if we want a masturbation joke.
What?
That's what a five knuckle shuffle is. Google that.
There's an actual. Yeah, let me Google this.
Okay.
I've never heard this term before outside of wrestling. Five knuckle.
You're gonna have like George Michael pop up or something.
Five knuckle shuffle.
Warning.
Oh wow. Urban Dictionary. The first.
What's
definition?
The definition?
To perform the act of masturbation, i.e. a wank.
A wank.
Number two, five knuckle shuffle. Two, shake hands with the devil. Self-pollute, self-harm, choke the chicken, relieve oneself, or wank.
Nothing about John Cena on Urban Dictionary?
He's number three.
Oh.
Okay. Five-knuckle shuffle is one of WWE Superstars John Cena's signature moves. Well, I did not know that, John, but thank you for the education. I guess there was a time when John Cena, all of his moves were named after repulsive, obscene language.
And the five knuckle shuffle, the STFU.
And the FU.
And the FU. Yeah. No wonder people don't like him. He's very disrespectful when it comes to winning a match and in the proper way.
I wonder how many kids know that true definition of the five knuckle shuffle. Repulsive.
They're probably going to find out in similar ways, only I just hope a parent is there to put a napkin on their screen.
Uh-huh.
John Cena, five knuckle shuffle.
I thought it was just a catchy little cute name, but you've ruined it for me, John.
I'm sorry. I am sorry. Cena starts bleeding after he takes a shot on the steps, and Cena starts no-selling and makes a comeback, but then he runs into this really sloppy Samoan drop by Umaga. Cena then gets tied up in the Tree of Woe, has the full crimson mask at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Umaga misses a running headbutt as Cena lifts up in the Tree of Woe position and then hits a top rope guillotine leg drop that sends Umaga shoulder first into the post. Cena then smashes a TV monitor onto the head of Umaga.
Yeah.
Holy fuck.
This looked brutal.
This I didn't need to see. Cena sets up on one announce table. He gets set up on the furthest one, the ECW table, the one of least importance for the rest of the show. And then Umaga goes onto the further announce table, sprints across the two tables, and then splashes through the third table as Cena gets out of the way. What a spot.
A very impressive spot. I'd be nervous doing this spot if I was Umaga, just for the tables to collapse.
I thought so, too.
Because we've seen how easy those tables can collapse, but it looked great. And like the great thing about the spots in this match was that they just like they don't really hesitate. You just like, and I guess you could say this for most wrestlers who attempt crazy spots. You just fucking do it, man. You don't even like pause to think for a second. You just run, go for it, and do it. The other thing I really liked about the spots in the stunts in this match was that they all built up. You know, you start first off with the steel steps, who, you know, it's pretty common foreign object, and you escalate to the second step spot, and then the TV monitors, the table spot, and then the finish.
Yeah, and this Umaga would eventually get up at the count of nine after this table spot. And one thing I just took away from this spot was just that, you know, the margin for error between us raving about this spot, and I mean, how easily Umaga could have just tripped on something as he was coming off that first table. That would have been one of the most embarrassing moments in wrestling history.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just, it would be so easy for him if there was a cord loose or those gaps where the monitors go in, if his foot caught onto it or something.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I wonder, like, those tables have, the design of those tables have been around for, like, 13 years now. Or more than that. What, 15 years almost? Whenever they switch those tables. I mean, could they not upgrade those things to something a bit more, I don't know. I'm sure they have switches on the bottom. Maybe we'll ask Jimmy Corderas this when we do this review on Aftermath Radio. But I'd like to know the mechanics of these tables and how you can safe-proof them.
What do you mean, safe-proof?
Well, like, prevent them from breaking it when you don't want them to. Like a latch or something.
Yeah. I mean, we have seen, you know, times where those tables have not broken.
Uh-huh.
I mean, where a certain spot, a guy gets slammed or something and it doesn't break.
But I just feel like that's something they could easily control by I don't know, something
perhaps.
Simple.
From there, we go back into the ring and Estrada... Armando Estrada, who is in the corner of Umaga, unhooks the top turnbuckle rope so Umaga can stab Cena with the metal rod. And he goes to do this, but misses Cena, and he gets hit with a FU and dumps Estrada out. Then he applies the STFU with the loose top ring rope and is strangling Umaga.
Yeah.
This would have got him fired in today's WWE.
Well, just this visual of Cena with the face full of blood strangling this man with a rope. This is not a visual we would see today.
And he holds this. He strangles him for what seems like an eternity. Finally lets go, thinking that he's finished the monster who pops up from this spot. And Cena then again takes him down and again strangles him with the rope. And this time, Umaga stays down for the 10 count. This went 23 minutes and 2 seconds. I thought this match was great.
Mm-hmm.
As much as Cena gets a lot of criticism, when he is in there with the right guy, he can be tremendous. And Umaga was such an underrated talent.
Yeah.
He was just, especially if you compare him to his days in 3-Minute Warning, he went over to All Japan and he came back a different worker. And this was a perfect example of that. I love this match. This was actually Dan Lavransky's match of the year that year.
Wow.
And a great, great match. I thought it told a very good story. And, you notice at this point, Cena was getting tons of boos, and you didn't hear any of that here.
I heard a little. A little bit, but they were quite faint. I mean, only from like a few adults in the audience.
It was by no way a distraction.
And
as so many Cena matches, that's what it becomes to me now.
Absolutely. But yeah, very good match, good booking, good execution of the big spots. I liked that they didn't need to go overboard with the stunts. I mean... You know, think of the Foley Foley and Rock Last Man Standing match with matches with the all the insane chair shots.
This was not a stunt show where it was spot to spot. This was a fight, and whatever happened to be at their disposal, they found a way to use it without the gimmicks becoming the focal point.
And as a result, those gimmicks did end up being a more impactful and dramatic part of the story in this match. So I thought it was a very good match from top to bottom.
And a loss that I thought in no way hurt Umaga. I mean, he was booked like a monster in here, and the world champion overcame the monster. Backstage, Coach is complaining about the lack of class he has seen here from ECW. And this leads to the Sandman walking in and drinking a beer in front of Coach, and then walks off. Ric Flair comes in, and Kelly says that Ric Flair is last but not least. And the lights dim, and the Extreme Exposé dancers, Layla, Brooke Adams from Hooters, and was there another one in here?
Kelly.
And Kelly.
Yeah.
All start dancing with Ric Flair.
Uh-huh.
I thought even Flair didn't save this segment.
God damn. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. How bad can we make these segments? the wrestling on this show was good. I enjoyed the wrestling on this show. I guess they wanted to level it out by...
They certainly did.
Having really terrible backstage segments.
Interesting choice for the Rumble. They went with Michael Cole, JBL, and Jerry Lawler calling the Rumble.
Are you surprised?
I remember being at the time, but if you recall, the 2007 Hall of Fame was when they put Lawler and Ross into the Hall of Fame, and at that point in time, the idea was to fully phase out Ross by putting him into the Hall of Fame. That was one of their many times they wanted to get rid of Ross, so I guess they did have that in mind here with this decision. They do a video on the history of the Rumble. Lillian Garcia gives us the long intro with all the rules about a match that everyone knows. And then we start things off with Ric Flair drawing number one, and they mention his 92 Rumble performance, which we'll chat about more next week. And number two, Finley, the unknown father of the little bastard.
That is correct. Two guys who are way too old to be as good as they are and as active as they are.
And they had some good notes here throughout. They brought up the fact that Mysterio was number two the prior year and won, as did Vince McMahon in 1999.
What a statistic.
Yep. Vince and Rey Mysterio, yeah. Something in common. So they start off, Kenny Dykstra was the third entrant, who vowed to be the youngest Rumble winner in history. A liar.
What is this kid doing now, Kenny Dykstra, do you know?
I think he recently... He did the Jeff Katz project, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yep. And I think he recently... He wanted to work a dark match for TNA. They wanted to bring him in, but they wanted him to pay to get there, and he said, no, thank you.
Wow.
Number four was Matt Hardy, and then number five was Edge, who comes out and spears Flair and Finley, but then misses Hardy, and then they... And when I say Mrs. Hardy, I don't mean Lita. I meant Edge speared Hardy. And they brought up the feud. JBL just, I think, loved getting under the skin of Matt Hardy. He's like, ah, this guy hates Edge because he stole his girlfriend. And Flair grabs a chair from under the ring, but Edge tosses Flair out. And then Dykstra is sent out. And so two eliminations there by Edge. Tommy Dreamer is out. ECW chants, which are a nostalgia chant at this point. And Cole puts over how JBL and Lawler lasted very long in the Rumbles, but Lawler then says, no, I just hid under the ring for the whole time. I really wasn't that great.
Why?
And Cole was like, oh, you ruined the punchline. You buried yourself. And Sabu is in seventh. He grabs a table before entering and just sets it up on the floor. What would happen?
Who knows? Who knows what he's thinking? Sabu chants are heard, and it just became apparent to me that all these ECW guys, all these ECW originals are very over, but, never really capitalized on.
Number eight was Gregory Helms, who was the Cruiserweight champion, and they note that he won the title at the 2006 Royal Rumble. He held that title for a full year. And JBL says that Helms wants to move up to heavyweight, just like Rey Mysterio and Bernard Hopkins. Ninth was Shelton Benjamin, and then 10th was Kane, who was the first entrant into this year's Rumble, who is still active with the WWE.
Wow, you're right.
And they play up how he eliminated 11 people in 2001, which was the record. And Kane does the big monster spot here. He eliminates Dreamer. He chokeslams Sabu off the apron and through the table he set up on the floor. Thanks, Sabu. Holy Christ, what a way to get eliminated. Battle Royals are supposed to be, not a night off, but you can take it pretty damn easy in there. And not for Sabu.
Why would he set up this table for himself? Maybe he knew. He wanted to cushion his fall, maybe.
He was predicting what could have come here with Kane. CM Punk was out, and they say, the up-and-coming CM Punk, looking to make a name for himself.
In his first Royal Rumble.
And JBL says, this guy doesn't drink and he doesn't do drugs. I call that boring, and he doesn't have a social life. So the inspiration for Daniel Bryan's character came long before Bryan was ever on TV. King Booker comes out 12th, and he immediately tosses out Shane Helms. And they were trying to, put heat on Booker, who had recently lost the world title to Batista. Super Crazy is out 13th. And the announcers say, he's super. and he's crazy. Slogans that never caught on, way. He's super and he's crazy. He's super crazy. And JBL notes that he thinks that Crazy worked as his doorman in New York. And they bring up other Mexicans to participate in the Rumble, including Mil Máscaras, who eliminated himself in the 97 Rumble. And JBL calls him super idiot. And that Mil Máscaras still owes him money.
Wow. That's...
JBL was awesome.
That's hilarious.
Super idiot. Jeff Hardy is out next. He works together with Matt, hits the Poetry in Motion on Kane. Sandman comes out for the Bushwhacker spot. And JBL says, Austin drank a lot of beer and eliminated 36 people in total. But Sandman is not going to have that same reaction, where he's instantly eliminated by Booker T, despite getting what was a good reaction, way.
That's what I'm saying. All these ECW guys had tremendous reactions. They all, you know, the thing about the ECW's originals, it's very much like Pride Fighters in the UFC. They have an aura, like a mystique about them.
They fought somewhere obscure.
Or just somewhere mysterious from this really cool place. But boy, was this a fuck you to all that.
This was just a few weeks after that dreadful December to Dismember pay-per-view. Yeah,
there you go.
And this was the receipt. Randy Orton was out next. Him and Edge, who were a team at this point, this team rated RKO. They dumped out Crazy, and then they eliminated both Hardys. Chris Benoit was out 17th. Rob Van Dam was out 18th. This is where Kane threw out Booker T, but then Booker comes in, hits an axe kick, and he eliminates Kane to lead to just a hot program with Kane and Booker.
Oh, yeah.
There's something I want to see. Then Viscera is out. Johnny Nitro. Kevin Thorne, who wore a tie for the occasion. Hardcore Holly is out 22nd. They said this is his sixth Rumble appearance. And we just reviewed the 94 Rumble where he debuted. So between 1994 and 2007, he only managed to get into six Rumbles.
Is that a true statistic?
I don't see why they would lie.
Yeah.
They could have been mistaken. But maybe that's true.
I have a hard time believing that.
Well, there was the one year he challenged Brock Lesnar for the WWE title at the Rumble.
Wow.
So.
Don't remember that.
I don't understand this. 94 to 2007.
Maybe they don't count the Sparky Plug days.
Maybe not. Shawn Michaels comes out to a gigantic pop at number 23, but comes out to his DX theme. And big pop, obviously, as this was in San Antonio. The ring clears out, and Michaels eliminates Finlay, who had lasted 32 and a half minutes up until this point. Everyone works together to toss out Viscera. Michaels then back body drops Shelton Benjamin out. Chris Masters is out 24th, and this is where Nitro gets tossed out by Chris Benoit off the turnbuckle. Chavo Guerrero is out 25th. RVD was on the turnbuckle for a spot, and he goes to come off the ropes, but Punk just walks away. And I don't know if he didn't see Van Damme setting up for a spot, but Van Damme just had to casually climb down off the turnbuckle when Punk left. MVP was out 26th, Carlito 27th, where they note that four people have won when they've drawn number 27, and it was not going to be five after Carlito got that number. Then the Great Khali is out 28th, who lays out everyone. He delivered chops to the head of everyone, a spot that I always enjoyed Khali administering. And he tosses out Holly. Miz comes out, lasted 5 seconds. He was eliminated immediately by Khali, and then Van Damme was tossed out. Punk is sent out. Carlito gets chopped in mid-springboard, and then Khali dumped out Chavo Guerrero. So Khali was just running through everyone, and then The Undertaker comes out, number 30, and he had a program ongoing with Khali, so there was a big stare-down with Khali and Taker. JBL mentions that no one has ever won who has drawn number 30, and Khali and Taker fight back and forth, and Taker eventually clotheslines him over the top. This was not pretty by any means. The old school was delivered to MVP, and the final four this year were Undertaker, Shawn Michaels, Edge, and Orton. And MVP actually came back with a chair, but Orton took it and smashes Taker right in the head. Edge teases a spear to Orton, who then turns around and holds up the chair, and they were teasing problems between Edge and Orton, but they never actually came to blows. Orton hits an RKO to Michaels, and then Michaels gets sent to the floor. Taker makes a comeback onto Edge and Orton as Michaels continues to sell on the floor. We see a spear to Edge, and then a chair shot to Taker's head by Edge, so two chair shots to Taker's head, and he was actually bleeding from the second one. And they go to set up a concerto to Taker, but Michaels comes back in. Orton runs into a back body drop and is eliminated, and then Edge gets super kicked out. Michaels and Taker laying on their backs. Quite the visual here. And then Taker rises up, and then Michaels did the kip up, and JBL and Cole, I thought, were great here for the Michaels-Undertaker finish.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, two Texas baby faces is their final two.
And two guys who have been kept separate ever since the brand extension began. I mean, Michaels had taken that time off, but when he came back, he was on Raw, Taker was on SmackDown. There was very little interaction between these two, so it was a fresh combination. And I thought the announcers were just over the top here. Michael Cole at one point yells out, "This is about WrestleMania. This is about living." Living. And they fight on the top turnbuckle. Michaels hits a top rope elbow, but then Taker blocks a super kick, hits a choke slam. Michaels comes back with Sweet Chin Music. Michaels goes for another Sweet Chin Music, but this time Taker catches him, tosses him over, and gets the win. 56 minutes and 20 seconds, the Rumble goes. And they mention this is Taker's first Rumble win. Edge lasted the longest at just over 44 minutes, and JBL just sold this finish tremendously well, putting it over. And I thought the final 10 minutes were just fantastic between Taker and Michaels.
I agree with you. Everything I felt from the final four onwards was great. However, I do have to say, this was a Rumble that seemed to me like everything before that wasn't much of a spectacular. I felt it was pretty barren combinations, whereas, you know, comparing to the 1994 Rumble, we saw a lot of interaction between guys currently in storylines, guys in tag teams, and new feuds building strictly from the combinations that they were getting in the Rumble. I didn't see that in this one. I found this to be a lot of just random combinations for the sake of having a Rumble. So that was my big gripe with it. But you're right, seeing Michaels and Taker in there as the last two was a very special thing.
I thought between Cena and Umaga and the Rumble overall, I thought was one of the stronger Rumbles, and the finish, I loved that finish with Michaels and Taker, one of the best, and I give this show an 8.5 out of 10.
Very good. I enjoyed the show too. I liked the undercard a lot on this show, and to me, it made this show worth watching, more so than the Rumble match itself. So I give this one 7.5 out of 10.
All right. Well, we will dive into your feedback now, and we'll kick things off with Alexander Rios, who wrote a short novel for us. 2007 Rumble. I remember it vividly. After going to the 2006 Rumble live in Miami, my best friend at the time, myself, gathered our friends together and ordered this pay-per-view. Unfortunately, it was the last Rumble I ever saw with that group of friends. For as the product became worse and worse at the time, trying to explain to my girlfriend at the time the differences of pro wrestling like ROH and WWE's Sports Entertainment Sideshow, I admit it was the first time I ever was kind of embarrassed, and to be perfectly honest, in general for Vince McMahon, basically peeing on the original ECW and putting on that garbage on Sci-Fi. Let me just say for starters, I nominate Bobby Lashley as the Scott Putski Award winner in any pay-per-view that has him on the card, and that's saying something for a show that also has Batista. I remember the show being pretty short in terms of matches. The three world title matches, a non-title tag team match between the Hardys and Eminem, the fake ECW championship match between Lashley and Test pissed me off because at the time I was hoping for something close to the original ECW, but with Paul Heyman gone, never happened, so we had an ECW title match with rules, an epic fail. The other two title matches, one for SmackDown between Kennedy and Batista, was too short. I thought it was a great short match. They got the best out of each other, and if I remember correctly, it was the first time Kennedy had done a senton. The WWE title match, Last Man Standing, I am not at all high on Cena matches, especially lately, but to me at the time, from late 06 to when he got hurt, this was some of his finest work of his career, and this match with Umaga was the best one. The rope choking spot, I actually marked out for. As for the Rumble itself, the year had an added bonus with the fact it was Jim Ross calling this one. No, he didn't. My girlfriend at the time was shocked to see Ric Flair still wrestled. Just in a... Okay. So, he enjoyed the show, and he gives it a 6 out of 10.
Thomas Leffler. Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time commenter. I remember this show. This was one of the first pay-per-views I had ever bought, just becoming a fan about 6 months prior. The opener was a good match, though similar to the match the two teams had at December to Dismember. After the ECW title match, which I have no comment on, other than that it was a replacement for the Divas, there were very two pleasant surprises. I think Kennedy was really starting to get over at this point, and the match with Batista was good only because it wasn't a crapshoot. On the other hand, Umaga and Cena had one of the best last man standing matches ever, not to mention Cena's best match of his 07 reign. The Rumble match was good, and the last 10 minutes with Taker and Shawn, although overshadowed by WrestleMania's in the future, was a classic showdown. Overall, a very good show from top to bottom, ignoring the ECW match, an 8 out of 10.
We go to Jared William. I personally enjoyed this Rumble, watching it back recently. I never really cared for the Cena-Umaga feud, but was a huge fan of Mr. Kennedy, only to obviously getting beat by Batista. The Rumble match itself was fairly entertaining, despite the real lack of star power in it. Undertaker and Michaels being the final two made it that much better and went on to feature, in my opinion, two good title matches at WrestleMania 23, a 7 out of 10.
We go to Blaine Vandergren, who you can catch at the Wild Wing at Woodside Square.
Oh.
Every once in a while. I run into him there sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was a great show. The opening match with the Hardys and Eminem was top-notch. I remember how over Mr. Kennedy was at the time, and the beat-the-clock sprint was a decent way to get him into the title picture, as he just came off of a great feud with Taker. And it's so sad to see what he's become in TNA. But the match he had with Batista was a decent one. However, it paled in comparison to the Last Man Standing match, which really stole the show for me. The Rumble match itself was good, but my criticism is that there was really no element of surprise, and that you knew going into it that there were really only two choices to win, and one of them did. Other than the Lashley test match, though, it was a pretty good show.
I think at the time, a lot of people thought the opposite, that because it was in San Antonio, it was a shoe-in Michaels would win. So I actually thought the finish was a bit of a surprise for people. We go to Brad Ward. I remember this pay-per-view because originally I was going to miss this pay-per-view, but I went to see some girl in Saskatoon, and then things didn't work out and found out she cheated on me. Long-distance relationships never work. So I was able to make it back home to watch the Rumble pay-per-view. What a great setup.
Hey, wrestling's always there whenever you have girl issues. There's always wrestling.
Wrestling is the woman that never leaves you,
that's
folks.
It, that's it.
Hardys and Eminem, I thought it was a fun tag match, but nothing compared to the ladder match they had. Test and Lashley was pretty terrible, and the count-out victory over Test didn't do anything to help that cause. Batista and Kennedy, I like this match, but I thought it did nothing for Kennedy in the end. But then again, you don't want two title matches in a row to end in a non-pin finish. Also, I think the mentality the entire time was to keep Batista as hot as possible with the title heading into Mania. Cena and Umaga, I remember this match for the spot where Umaga attempted to spike Cena with the turnbuckle, but Cena hit the AA instead and choked out Umaga with the rope. I find Cena to be suited best in last man standing matches for any match type. One thing that was apparent about this match was how great Umaga was for a big man. And the Rumble, I really enjoyed. I enjoyed the most, as did most people. It was the great exchange at the very end with Michaels and Taker. I think it was the exchange which was what led them to doing Shawn and Taker at Mania 25. Also, it should be noted that the plan originally was for Triple H to win the Rumble. Part of me has to wonder if we would have gotten Triple H, Michaels versus Taker, if Triple H did not get injured. And finally, I enjoyed the Rumble. The Rumble itself was really good. Okay. And one of the WWE's biggest shows of all time.
Jeremy Gordon. Taker and Michaels took that Rumble from good to great. Those last 10 minutes were extraordinary, and that ending could have gone either way. It's crazy that this really was the first interaction between these two in almost 10 years, and we wouldn't see them lock up again for another two. And to think, we wouldn't have gotten any of this, or the great build-ups of the Michaels, Cena, and Batista-Taker matches for Mania if Triple H had stayed healthy.
Go to Caesar. I remember watching this event in 2007 and really enjoyed it. Watching it back a couple of months ago, I wasn't really into it. Opening match was okay. I skipped the ECW match. And the Rumble match wasn't a memorable one, excluding the final minutes. The big spot for me was the Sabu table spot. Michaels and Undertaker match was awesome. That at the time, I wanted to see the two at Mania. With the Undertaker win, it set up a great match at WrestleMania 23 and more great matches throughout the year. I give this Rumble event a 6 out of 10.
James Rattenbury Gale. I thought this Rumble was awesome. One of the best. Eminem and the Hardys lived up to the Rumble tradition by having an awesome tag team opener. The Cena and Umaga match was great. One of the best matches Cena has ever had. As for the Rumble match going into it, there could have been any of five winners. It had everything. Count how many world champions there are in this match. For me, this is an easy 9 out of 10.
Let's continue on to David C. Warden. I agree that the final part of the Rumble was a highlight and great storytelling from two legends, and it's sad to think you probably won't have two guys facing off with the fans having so much invested in them ever again, thanks to the hotshot booking of today. It's sad to see how many guys are no longer with us from this time, but having watched, I really miss Shelton Benjamin because he's incredible and would play Jack Swagger's role far better with Vicky to talk for him. Carlito, who could have had a great feud with someone like Zack Ryder, and Batista, who would be an awesome foil as the badass heel for any babyface today. It was also great to hear JBL, 7 out of 10.
Dennis Amaya, the most memorable part about this Rumble was the final minutes of the Rumble match. Everything involving Edge, Orton, Michaels, and Undertaker were excellent and really added to the Royal Rumble. The last part with Shawn and Taker has to be one of the best endings to a Rumble match ever. The rest of the show was fine. The last man standing match was fantastic and was one of the better matches in John Cena's career. The opening was also a good match and demonstrated a lack of a tag division nowadays. The ECW and world title matches were shit. Mr. Kennedy was shit back then, just like he is shit today. Overall, a good show, 7 out of 10.
Shane, this show had my personal favorite Royal Rumble match of all time. Just pure genius how the ending with Taker and Shawn was booked. The undercard was not so great, with the exception of the last man standing match and the opening match. It's scary that at the time, the three guys who wrestled on the show would be dead within the next 3 years. Anyways, should be a great show, and I hope that there will be more polls for future reviews.
Frank Zawadzinski. Damn, this is the first time commenting on a review away, but these guys are writing a thesis statement on this. All I have to say is I think Vince needed to fire the person who made that WrestleMania banner. It looks like something your mother made for your grade school birthday party on your 92 Macintosh computer.
Rick Bergman, Hardcore Holly rule was in full effect, and I liked it. For the many, many flaws the great Khali has, I like him as a dominant figure in a battle royal setting. I also like The Undertaker winning his first Rumble and being the first man to enter 30th and win it. I thought Michaels and Taker ending dragged on a bit, but overall was a good event, and I give the 7.5 out of 10.
We end your feedback, and there was a lot of it this week, with Kieran Roche. There are two things about this show that I'll never forget, the first being the brilliant last couple of minutes of the Rumble between HBK and Taker, which was just a little prelude to the WrestleMania matches that would happen years later. The second is obviously the last man standing match between Cena and Umaga, which in my opinion was one of the best matches Cena's ever had, and certainly the best match Umaga ever had in the WWE, one of the best matches where I can say blood really added to the match.
So thanks to everyone for your feedback on the 2007 Royal Rumble, an event that I think generally was pretty well received, particularly the last man standing and the finish of the Rumble. And we're going to wrap things up, everyone. As we mentioned at the top, we're going to review one more Royal Rumble, and that will be the 1992 edition that you voted on. So that's going to be coming up next Wednesday. And in the meantime, we'll be back on Friday with Review and Impact alongside Nate Milton. And this coming Sunday on The Law, we're going to be previewing the Royal Rumble with lots of predictions that you can make in terms of who's going to be winning, who will be lasting the longest, and it segues in very well to our Royal Rumble pool that is currently ongoing. We've got about 80 or so people already signed up, Way. So you can go to tinyurl.com/rumble2012. It's free to enter. We will be giving out maybe prizes to maybe the top three finishers, and you just make your picks for the Rumble, and we will reveal those results the night after the Rumble.
Cool. Yeah.
So I guess we'll end things off.
Hey, by the way, check us out on Aftermath Radio.
Yes.
Featuring hosted by Arta O'Kell and Jimmy Corderas, featuring John Pollock and myself. We are on, I'm guessing we'll be
tonight. It's up right now.
I'm guessing it's up right now. We'll be chatting about this very Rumble. But
we won't be doing the exact same review.
No, it'll be a very different format. But, of course, look for the insight of Jimmy Corderas and Arta O'Kell. Very different conversation, and it should be a lot of fun.
Yep, so you can get that at radio.thescore.com. It's the Aftermath Recall Series, and we're doing the 2007 Rumble. And we'll end things off with a little Celine Dion.
Spaces. loved you one true time. I hold you in my life, will always grow.